Marvel Comics Star Wars Series, Issue 16, The Hunter. My name is Joshua Lappin-Bertoni, and this is the Marvel Star Wars Podcast, where each episode we take a look at all the issues of the Marvel Comics Star Wars Series, issue by issue, the good, the bad, and the ridiculous. Speaking of the ridiculous, this issue marks the return of Jackson, the bunny rabbit. I'm sure you're all looking forward to that. Let's take a look at the cover, shall we? We get, I call these in Spider-Man the floating heads of guilt, but basically, we have, when there's heads of comic book characters and just their heads on the cover in various places, I call them floating heads. We get the floating head of Jackson, and I'm guessing that this is supposed to be Luke Skywalker, but due to the contents of the issue, I'm thinking that it might be, maybe it's Jim, I don't know. But who knows, because Jim is drawn very differently and he doesn't have his Jim freckles. Chewbacca and Han Solo, who still, Chewbacca actually looks more like Chewie, but Han doesn't really look like Harrison Ford. And R2 and 3PO, who don't actually appear in the issue. In fact, the only person that appears within this issue and not in a flashback or a dream sequence would probably be Jackson. So, we're in for it. This is actually, I think it's the first Star Wars piece of media ever not to feature any of the film characters, except for, you know, flashbacks and stuff. I mean, nowadays we have the comics that'll focus on the side characters or Tales of the Jedi, but I think at this point in the expanded universe, which really is just like a storybook, a novelization, the Marvel Comics and Splinter of the Mind's Eye, we've always had at least Luke or one of the other biggies. Well, in the middle of all these people is a guy in a big blue armor with a skull on it. He's got really beady eyes, you know, he's angry, and he's got a big gun, and there's a knife attached to this gun. I love it. Why do you have a knife attached to your gun? Or, maybe, let me look closer at this. Yeah, the knife is attached to the gun, and he's known as the Hunter. Death and destruction are his tools. The Star Warriors. Oh my god, we're still calling it that. The Star Warriors are his targets. We have a different team this issue. Yes, Archie Goodwin is still writing, but we got guest artists Walt Simonson and Bob Wycheck. Walt Simonson, very big name in comics. Most comic fans have heard of him. I'm not going to go over his little bibliography and biography, but if you want to, you can go on to Wikipedia, heck, even Wikipedia, and they might tell you some stuff. He later did return to Star Wars in the 90s and did River of Chaos with Dark Horse. I believe that was him. I think it was him and Louise Simonson together. I could be wrong on this, but I'm 90% sure. Which also featured people that weren't the big movie people. In fact, the only movie character that was in it was Princess Leia. Well, this issue opens up in the middle of an action sequence. The narration box introduces us to a man called Valance. Valance is a bounty hunter. That's right, we get a bad A bounty hunter before Boba Fett, who is leading a raid on a medical station. He's not doing this for a particular bounty. This is a personal mission for himself that he's financing, as we're told. He orders his crew that there will be no survivors. And he runs into somebody at the medical station, a droid, which has a tray in its hand with a coffee cup and some sort of food. And that is unfortunate for all others at this isolated alt-world medical station, particularly if they happen to be droids. Good grief, there must be some error. This facility is neutral. Even the Empire shut up, junk! As he shoots the thing and it falls apart, Valance experiences regret that there's no time to enjoy the shooting. Wonder if that's the same sort of regret that Han had when he fried Greedo. In case that little scene doesn't clue you in, Valance does not like droids. Now, the narration box reminds us that this is very, very common among the Bat Galaxy, but Valance's hate rivals the average person. Valance and his men destroy the computer record system while two bounty hunters run into somebody in the sick bay that they've, well, someone that us readers have seen before. He's an old man, and yes, it is Don Juan Quixote, and boy, he's more wrinkly. He's drawn like Ebenezer Scrooge, and he's even got little whiskers on his chin. Elsewhere, as one of the inpatient bays are invaded, a sick old man, lost in delirium, speaks to shadows within his mind. You bring my lightsaber? Good. Then Don Juan Quixote is ready. Ready to fight again. Han Solo, what a team we were. Your Wookiee friend, the lovely Amaza, Jackson, the Lepus, Carnivorous, and of course, the boy. The boy and his droid. As the two bounty hunters and Jackson's crew look on, one of them, who happens to be a robot himself, which is weird, "Captain Valance, come quickly! We're on to something big." But the old warrior has tired. He drifts in the silence, which means that once again, Don Juan Quixote, not only is he back, but he's also dead. Again. This is the second death he's had in this series. Don't really like those chin whiskers and the little Scrooge-ish appearance he has. Why is Valance letting that robot bounty hunter on his team? That's really weird. Well, Valance does take an interest when they tell him what Don Juan said before he passed on. Him and the bounty hunters set some charges, take off, and the medical station blows up. Apparently, they did this so that they can hide something in Valance's past. What is it? What is it? What's going on? What is it? They are now going to hunt the people Don Juan spoke about, and Valance orders Jackson to be their first target. Why? Because he assumes that a giant green rabbit will be the easiest to find. He's got a point there. So, we cut to a city, and more on that city in a bit. Actually, you know what, I'll tell you this now. According to Wikipedia, this little city planet that they're on, which wasn't named in the comic, they later retconned it to be Nar Shadda in one of the Star Wars source books or whatever. So, this is actually the first appearance of Nar Shadda, just not named. Jackson and Amaza, who are apparently together as a team. He's talking to her. "Sure you won't change your mind, Amaza?" "No thanks, Jackson. The high life on these backwater worlds can get pretty low. I'll oversee the ship's refueling. Don't get your ears burned. Cute lady. Even if she doesn't have fur. Good scambler, too. Managed to run up our small stakes into enough to get my old freighter repaired, and..." Before he can finish that end, we see some people waiting in the shadows. Yes, those would be bounty hunters. Jackson did some flirting with Amaza during the Aduba arc. Towards the end, she seemed to have gone from annoyance to tolerance. Now they're traveling together. Is there more going on here? They together now? Is that thought too sick to even think about? Jackson is ambushed by the bounty hunters, and guess what two of them are named? Daffy and Fudd. Get it? Get it? Ha 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 ha. Just like in Looney Tunes, ha 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 ha. They hang him upside down, how humiliating, and begin to torture him. They're demanding that he reveals the planet where he and the rest of the Starhoppers had their adventure. Planets are very big. Why is it that in Star Wars, people usually only need the name of the planet to find someone located on it? What if they search the wrong hemisphere? I never understand that about Star Wars. It's like, okay, you know, so-and-so's hiding on Naboo, and then they go to Naboo, a big planet, and, you know, they find... I mean, that would be like if I was looking for, you know, someone, and they said, okay, that person's in Texas, and I went to Texas, and I automatically found them. Texas is pretty big, and guess what? In Star Wars, planets are even bigger. But I digress, because Amaza shows up. She apparently changed her mind and decided to spend the night on London Town with Jackson after all. She threatens the bounty hunters to drop their weapons. And we get this page of her, she blasts them, and it looks like her Google blaster fires into a million different directions, and the one-time member of the infamous Black Hole Gang is perfectly able to back up all she says. To which she goes up to, after the men flee, or some of them are killed, she goes up to Jackson, who's still hanging upside down. "Some fun, eh, Fuzzy? Like being back on a Aduba 3 with Han and the gang. Oh, no. Amaza, I was getting my ears welted not to tell them that. If any of them are still kicking..." And one is. And when a first shot isn't enough to stop him, well, he gets away. What kind of gun is it that Amaza has? Like I said, it's firing in all directions. That second-to-last panel that I was reading from, which you can see at StarWarsMarvel.com, definitely shows some intimacy between Amaza and Jackson. Boy, the stares they must get. And just to describe it again, she's going up to him. He's hanging upside down. She's kind of stroking him, you know, his head. And their faces are about an inch apart from each other. Huh. Jackson and Amaza take swiftly to space in the good ship Rabbit's Foot. Ha 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 ha! His ship is called Rabbit's Foot. Get it, get it, get it. Destination, the little regarded home rimworld of Aduba 3, in an isolated village in the vast outback. They land. "Looks like we beat the bad guys. Maybe we'll even have time to figure out why they're coming here. Jab at a hot put a price on Han Solo's head." Footnote, see Star Wars, Issue 2, Archie Goodwin. "But those creeps acted like they're also on our other pal. Jim, who called himself the Star Killer Kid, and his robot Effie threw in with us to defend the place against local bandits, which is referenced in the footnote. Issues 9, 8, and 10. Archie again. So we run into Jim, and he's shaking hands with Jackson, and he's like, me? Wanted by bounty hunters? As he's holding his trophy wife, Miri, who we met in the Aduba 3 arc. Pretty funny, Jax. I'm an old married farmer. Miri and I are expecting our first baby. There's no way. Somebody thinks there is, kid. And if right or wrong, they're the kind of sweeties we'll stomp home in dust just to stay in practice. Unless we make some plans. And fast. Okay, we know Jackson is a giant green rabbit. Do they need to remind us every panel he's on? His ship is called the Rabbit's Foot. Come on. Speaking of Jackson, when he's meeting with Jim, he's incredibly off-scale in that panel. Jabba the Hutt, when they talk about him, it's still spelled H-U-T. Like I said, this is done until Return of the Jedi. They even went back, I noticed, when I was looking at some novelizations, and they when they do the reprints, they correct it, and they add more T's and stuff. Jim and Miri are already married and expecting a baby? That was pretty fast. Maybe a little too fast. Was it a shotgun wedding? Did he, you know, have to marry her? And he refers to himself as an old farmer. Dude, you don't even look like you're old enough to have a drink on planet Earth yet. For someone who wanted action and adventure and leaving the planet, he sure seems content with life as a farmer. Go figure. Might have something to do with that, you know, hot wife he has, though. I mean, even Sergio wanted to rape her. We then get the origin story of Valance. Amaza looks to the sky. Nothing is visible yet. But we do see Valance's ship, which is visible to us, the readers. Approaching the Aduba system, Captain Valance. Time to review the tape, so no one is mistaken about what our goal is. Yet, Valance's own mind drifts back to his last moments, serving the Empire in an outworld scrimmage. And we see a bunch of stormtroopers firing some guns at some flying X-wings. Moments when his career as a stormtrooper officer of ruthless promise was ended by a rebel serial torpedo. And there's an explosion. He survived the blast, but by a margin so narrow, the retreating Imperials left him at the Telos IV medical station to die. That was the station that was raided at the beginning of the issue. Instead, to his own regret, he was saved, at a price, the knowledge he could never again stand with pride in the Empire's ranks. So, obviously, there are still some pieces of the story missing, but they aren't that hard to guess at this point, and it will all make sense come the final page. He pops in a bootleg tape that he has in his possession of, which gives us another excuse for a splash page to pay tribute to the movie. The same hate he felt on first viewing the tape, taken from a rebel spy slain by his men. It is a legal dupe of an Imperial transmission and details the incredible escape of a Senator and Princess Leia Organa from the Death Star. That one participant, Han Solo, had a price on his head. Interest, Valance, as did the hint that the Sith Lord, Darth Vader, was soundly tested by a strange, unknown old man. But it was the boy who fired Valance's fury, for his part was done with the cooperation, indeed, and friendship of two droids. The tape image fades. And it's a splash page. We see Obi-Wan Kenobi fighting Darth Vader, and the lightsabers are yellow by Obi-Wan and green by Vader, and they're shaped like candy corn, of all things. And the splash page has the Death Star kind of upside down. We get Leia firing a gun, Han and Chewie firing a gun. It's still not Chewie's real bowcaster. You know, we get Luke. It's basically a splash page in the movie characters, which is the only time we see them within the issue. Seems like we're always getting the, remember the movie? Wasn't that cool splash page every issue? I'm enjoying them. Still, they're gimmicky. This is the first time we've seen a green lightsaber, by the way, even though it's a coloring mistake. Now, for those who haven't been keeping score, Valance is on this mission because he thinks that the heroes of Aduba are actually the Death Star heroes. He thought Don Juan was Obi-Wan, that Jim was Luke, etc. And as that page details, the reason he's hunting Luke, because he's friends with robots. Yes, he just doesn't resent Luke for it. He's hunting him for it. That's his motivation. This kid is friends with robots? Kill him! It is interesting that Valance knows about the identity of Luke Skywalker before Imperial Intelligence officially does, which the hunt to find out Luke Skywalker's identity is going to become a focal point later on in this run. Valens' ship enters Aduba's orbit. They are tracking the heat signature of recently landed ship, assuming that it is Jackson warning his friends. That answers my previous gripe about finding someone on a huge planet, but raises another question. Why assume it was Jackson's ship that landed? We established in issue 7 that Aduba has a Mos Eisley's-like spaceport. Wouldn't there be ships going in and out of there constantly? Before they could go any further, the rabbit's foot. Get it? Get it? It's called the rabbit's foot and Jackson's a big rabbit? Yuck, 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 yuck. Well, the rabbit's foot attacks Valens' ship. Valens eventually shoots down the rabbit's foot, and it crashes into the surface on Aduba. Valens sends his hunters to check the wreckage. Turns out, it's an ambush. Amaeza and Jackson survived and start to shoot at the hunters. Meanwhile, Jim has been raiding in the grass to follow through his end of the plan.
This is it! Wish Han and Chewbacca were here to take charge. But at least they taught us we could fight for what's ours, so let's see how well we learned.
Jim fires from the tall grass, his blaster into the air. The ground! This place isn't subject to quakes. What? Banthas! The crazy villagers have stampeded their herd. Yes, we get a panel of stampeding Banthas crushing the bounty hunters, which is probably one of the silliest Marvel Comics Star Wars pieces of art ever. Once again, StarWarsMarvel.com, check it out on the blog page. Those who argue that the Marvel Comics were just silly could use that panel to make a very strong case. So, Amaeza shoots off the survivors of the stampede, and this only leaves Valens, who confronts them.
Forget reaching your ship,
which is what Valens is running to when he runs into Jim, who's still not wearing any pants, Jackson and Amaeza at gunpoint. Amaeza zapping your mate wasn't so fascinating that we'd miss you.
Captain Valens, correct? Even if it ain't, we want answers. Like, how come you're after our pal's Jim's hide?
You're the boy who fought in Han Solo's group here? But you're not the one on the Death Star transmission tape.
I don't even know what it is that you're
after the wrong boy! Between my obsession and the crew's greed, we did all this for nothing!
Valens drops his empty blaster and laughs long and hard. Boy, I'd forgotten all about Jim's bare legs. Ugh. You mistook him for Skywalker. Hey, Valens, you really can't blame him. They could be cousins or brothers. The writers didn't even shy away from the differences when they introduced Jim back in issue 8. Valens quickly blasts them with something coming from his hand and gets away, vowing to find Solo and his droid loving companion. We get one last panel with Jim, Jackson, and Amaeza.
I'm not sure what happened, but it seems to be over. Yank it, I guess. For us! For Han's friend and the droids, I wonder.
While in the fleeing craft's cockpit, Valens claws compulsively at his face.
I underestimated them. Should never have had to use that arm, but I did it swiftly. My secret should still be safe.
And a terrible secret it is for a robot hater, living with the fact that at the Telos IV medical station, half his body was replaced by cybernetic parts. Terrible for a being, a cyborg, only makes Valens more determined that the hunt shall go on.
And Valens rips off the skin from his hand and half his face, and we see that he's got kind of half a robot face, kind of like a Terminator. In fact, I think that that's the example that they used over on the Two True Freaks podcast. And it says at the bottom, next issue, The Empire Strikes. And no, it's not The Empire Strikes Back. We still have a while before we get to that. It's just a coincidence that Marvel had the title first. So, take a good look at Jackson, Amaeza, and Jim. That is the last time you will ever see them in a Marvel Star Wars comic. For all the fussing people did about Jackson, I thought that he was a regular supporting character, but it's really only those 4 issues he appears in. Yet he seems to be one of the first things that people bring up when talking about these comics. Jackson and the others will appear again in the expanded Star Wars material, though. A quick look at Wikipedia says some articles and source books later reused the characters and expanded on their backgrounds. That revelation of Valens, I suppose some people might find it deep, not me. It's, you know, oh, the guy who hates robots is half robot. Ironic! Sorry, guys, doesn't really do it for me. And sorry, Scott and Chris, I know that you really like this character in the storyline. Not for me. Why did he have to rip off his skin anyway? I know that us readers needed a visual, but what's the story reason? Let me just take off half of my skin so I could dramatically remember I'm half a robot. As for the writing, this was an easy and fun read by Goodwin. I enjoyed finally having a done-in-one story. I enjoyed seeing the old characters again, but could have done without the new additions of Daffy and Fudd. Ha 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 ha! No movie characters appeared in this issue, except for the splash page where Valance was looking at the bootleg. It's never easy to do a story without the main characters and keep me interested. Other comics and novels in the expanded universe rarely hold my interest, unless the movie characters appear. Goodwin was able to pull it off. Interestingly enough, there are whispers that Jackson was so hated by George Lucas that it's the reason Roy Thomas left the series. Until I hear it from an official source, I'm remaining skeptical. And yet, they were allowed to use Jackson here by Archie Goodwin. Go figure. As for the art, Jackson seemed freakishly tall, and Don Juan seemed very yucky. Otherwise, I enjoyed the art. Walt Simonson's reputation precedes him, and he brought it this issue. The movie splash page was also very awesome. So join us again for the next podcast. We have another done-in-one issue, because that Empire Strikes blurb is a lie, but we will be doing the Empire Strikes all next week. Get ready for that. Don't forget to become a fan of Marvel Star Wars on Facebook. Go to the blog at StarWarsMarvel.com and check out our friends, GalacticBinder.com, a great source for different Star Wars websites. Unknown Regions Podcast is a great podcast chronicling the Star Wars expanded universe. I'm really loving the Yoda and Me podcast. It's an hilarious comedy podcast about Yoda being some guy's roommate. And of course, Two True Freaks and their Star Wars Monthly Mondays, who also look at the Star Wars Marvel Comics issues. See you later!